Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Welcome to Real Liberty Media. If you're listening live here every Wednesday and Saturday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. Man, it has been a crazy week here in Oregon. We, in the middle of April, we are having snow, rain, thunderstorms, hail, sunshine, warm, everything. We're having everything, literally. And especially the snow is just so bizarre for the valley floors here in Oregon. I mean, it's extremely rare to get snow to the valley floor anyway, but to have it in April, crazy. If you want to join the conversation, come to Real Liberty Media, get in the chat room there. You can listen when the show is live. You can chat with people. There's a lot of great information in the Real Liberty Media chat. So please come and join us. We're always looking for new faces here. Well, new fonts here, I should say. I wanted to share with you guys a couple things before I get into the meat of the show today. These are a couple dental stories, but I think they're significant and you should know about them because you may be in this position sometime as a patient and wonder why, as dentists, we do these things. So about a month ago, I had a patient come in and his blood pressure was really high. Now, this guy's blood pressure is always really high and he's being treated, but, you know, who knows how well he is at taking his meds or, you know, following the doctor's instructions. We don't know that. And the guy kind of travels a long ways to come and see me specifically for whatever reason. I don't know, but I mean, I appreciate it. But then he kind of expects me to do something because he's there. And if his blood pressure is high, and I'll explain why in a minute. But if his blood pressure, if any patient's blood pressure is too high, the medications we're going to use to numb a patient up is actually has the potential to drive that blood pressure up. So this guy came in and his blood pressure was high and he just wanted to get this crown on his tooth and it's a long story. He wanted to get a crown on his tooth and I said, listen, I said, I can't numb you up because your blood pressure is too high. And this anesthetic, if I give it to you, there's a chance it could give you a stroke. So I said, I'll try and put this crown on without anesthetic. If you would like to try that, because the tooth is root canaled, it shouldn't cause you any pain. And we can give that a go. So he was kind of willing to, do that. I was the one kind of dragging my feet about it because I already know it's going to be uncomfortable, you know, and the patient's not really going to have a good appointment. And then I'm going to be kind of tense because I have to be careful to not hurt him because I didn't numb him up. But anyway, I had to go in my office because one of the people in the office wanted to talk to me about something else. And I went in my office and there was like another patient, another two things that were kind of starting to cramp my time. So I went out and I told that patient, I said, hey, listen, I said, I'm not going to do this today. I said, you need to go see your primary care physician and you need to, you know, have him adjust your meds or something so that your blood pressure is in a safe zone so I can work on you. And the reason I was kind of short with him because these other two things that were going on were kind of irritating me and I had to kind of clear some space so I could deal with everybody. And hey, he wasn't really ready to be treated because his blood pressure was too high. Now, luckily, I did not use any anesthetic on that guy that day because guess what? He went home and in the afternoon, he had a stroke. Now, he had seen me first thing in the morning and I didn't use any anesthetic. In fact, I didn't even provide any kind of treatment whatsoever. That guy went home, was sitting there watching TV in the afternoon, and he had a stroke. So, you know, when you're going to go see your dentist, if you want to have a smooth appointment, make sure you're up on your meds, any meds you're taking, if it's diabetic medication, blood pressure medication, you know, stroke medication, any of that stuff, you know, make sure that you're keeping up on it before your appointment, especially now, man. I have people coming from, I can't even tell you, at least a 60-mile radius to come to my little clinic for whatever reason. I'm not 100% sure. I'm not the only gig in town, but from different areas, I'm probably the first dental clinic you come to. And it's kind of funny because I even have patients come in and they say, man, I didn't even know Sheridan was just right here off the highway because they'd never been here. And, you know, then they have to find the dental clinic, which is not hard to find because it's a little tiny town. So, you know, there's like a couple streets. That's not true. There's a bunch of streets. There's two main streets, you know, north, south, east, west. And we're on the east, west one. So it's pretty easy to find. But, you know, people are traveling a long ways and I really hate to turn them away. But you know what? I am so glad that I kind of stick to my guns, so to speak, because if I would have given that guy anesthetic and he would have had a stroke when he went to the hospital and they asked him, you know, all of the things that he did and what could have precipitated this, if he would have told them I gave him an anesthetic, they probably would have told him, oh, that's likely what gave you a stroke. And then they would come back at me for whatever reason, you know, malpractice or, you know, poor judgment or whatever. So it's kind of funny because I just learned about that yesterday. And then today I had another patient, kind of the exact same scenario, a guy who constantly has high blood pressure. He is not being treated for it. I saw him about a month ago, couldn't treat him, and I told him the same thing. I need you to go see a primary care physician, healthcare person to address your high blood pressure. And, of course, he didn't do that. He just thought he would come back in and his blood pressure would be fine. Well, guess what? His blood pressure was not fine again. And so today, again, he's not getting the treatment he needs because he just thought he'd skirt the system. And somehow, magically, his blood pressure would be good, and it wasn't. So off he goes, especially right after yesterday, having, you know, found out that a previous high blood pressure patient had a stroke in the afternoon. Now, I will tell you this. I will provide emergency care if somebody has high blood pressure, but it can't be skyrocketing high. It's got to be kind of really close to my acceptable limit. So anyway, that's a couple good lessons. I'm going to tell you one more dental story and then we'll move on. But so a patient had called a few times and I'd put them on an antibiotic because of symptoms they described over the phone of, you know, swelling and pain and pus draining from an infection. Obviously, it's an infection, so, you know, I'm going to write them an antibiotic. Well, they had said that the antibiotic wasn't really helping, so we changed the antibiotic to a different one. And they tried that for a few days, and then they called back, and they're like, hey, this antibiotic, it's not helping. The infection is spreading, and it's halfway down my throat. So we tell them, okay, you have to go to the ER. And the reason you have to go to the ER is because you need to get IV antibiotics and you need them stat. Well, he was like, well, I don't have the money to go to the ER. Like, okay, but that doesn't change the fact that I can't do anything for you. Once that swelling and infection gets beyond a certain point, it becomes life-threatening and I don't have the tools to help. So this guy shows up in the office today. Sure enough, he's infected. The infection is spreading down his neck. And I'm telling him for the third time, listen, I don't know what to tell you about not having the money to go to the ER. You're not going to need money if you wait much longer because you're going to be dead. But I don't know. I don't know if that guy will go to the ER or not. But if he doesn't, he's going to be in really bad shape. This infection, I'm not kidding, was halfway down his neck on one side. And it's scary. It's like dangerous. you know, letting an infection travel like that in your body. And it was huge, man. Anyway, hope he gets treated. I hope he finds something. But here's the deal. Like with an infection that big, you can't even open your mouth enough for me to do anything. So it's not like I can, you know, just like reach in there and take a tooth out. I can't even get a needle in there to numb you up because you're so freaking swollen that you can't open your mouth more than a few millimeters and you think I'm going to be able to do something for you. Well, I'm not. So anyway, hope that guy gets some help. I told him, I go, listen, I go, if you go into the hospital, you're probably going to be on IV antibiotics for like 12, 24 hours. I don't know what. And I said, by the way, they don't care if you can pay or not. I mean, they kind of have to treat you. So, you know, go in there with this life-threatening condition and they'll treat you. And yeah, they'll send you bills, but oh, well, you saved your life and, you know, now you have a debt. Oh, well. But, you know, go do something and save your life first. And that's the last thing I said to him. I go, listen, you know, the most important thing for you right now is, you know, you have a life-threatening condition. You need to get it taken care of. So go to the ER. Anyway, we'll see what happens with that too. Okay, so with this crazy weather this week, like I'm not kidding. There were, I think, three mornings now. What is today? Oh, it's Wednesday. Yeah, three mornings now. It has virtually been a blizzard up here on the hill. Like the snow has been so heavy, blowing like crazy, and just so dense, like snowflakes that are, you couldn't even see through, what, 100 yards. It was snowing so hard. It's kind of fun, honestly, to have this snow going on. I mean, we seldom get snow like that up here, even in, you know, the normal winter time when we have snow storms come through. But so it's been kind of fun. But also, I've been thinking about like the summer nights that are coming soon. Now, I'm not a summertime guy. I don't like the heat. I don't really like the sun that much, but I can tolerate sun if it's not hot. But man, if it's like above 90, and blue sky and sunshine, I just don't tolerate it well. I mean, that's just the way I am. But man, when that sun goes down and you start getting the stars in the summertime and there's so many things to see, I really love stargazing all times of the year. Wintertime is actually much better for stargazing because the air is cold and you can just see more clearly on those cold winter nights, especially when there's no moon. And up here, you know, we can kind of control the lighting so there's no light contamination to take our viewing away. But man, I was really thinking about it this week, like, you know, looking forward to the Perseid meteor shower, which is usually in August. I mean, it peaks kind of in August. It actually goes from mid-July through late August. But, you know, the peak number of meteorites you'll see is going to be around August 11th, 12th, something like that usually. I think this year it's 11th and 12th. I looked it up. But so I'm looking forward to that. It's always a good time to kind of sit out, you know, side with the fire going if you have a fire, you know, pit or something like that. Or if you're out camping, man, that's the best times. If you go on a little hike, get away from civilization, get up in the mountains or on the plains or in the high desert and get away from all the lights. And man, you can see some sky. And really, it's one of my favorite things to do. So I was kind of looking at, you know, stuff that might be coming up for us. And I did find this kind of interesting. Let me find it. Oh, yeah. So this year, stargazers like me will also have this to look forward to with lots of time to see it, too. As seen in the Northern Hemisphere, Venus, Saturn, and Mars began to cluster in late March of 2022, so just last month. Though whether they're far enough above the horizon to view before sunrise depends on your location. Observers farther east and south in North America will have views in the wee hours of the morning, while those in the Pacific Northwest won't see the cluster rise until about an hour before sunrise, which is kind of cool because you don't have to get up very, very early to see it. Well, that's not true. Early, I mean before sunrise, like half an hour versus 2 or 3 hours before sunrise. In the middle of the night is what I mean. But listen here. Around April 17th, Jupiter will join the line of Venus, Mars, and Saturn, and the Moon will move into this planetary conga line on April 23rd, appearing to the right and above Saturn, before moving out of view on April 29th, when it will appear too close to the Sun to be seen. The Moon will rejoin the planetary alignment starting May 21st. Finally, around mid-June, Mercury will zip into place alongside the other four planets and Earth's moon joining the party on June 17th. So from now until late June, you can see all five of these, of the planets that you can see with the naked eye, kind of lining up, and the moon will get in there a couple times too, which kind of may, you know, disrupt your ability to see things, but that'll be fun to look at and to kind of follow on those clear nights when, you know, we're sitting out in the hot tub or sitting out having fire s'mores or barbecue and grilling, whatever. So looking forward to doing that. That should be pretty fun. And then the Perseids too. We always have the sleepover, the camp out, during the Perseid meteor shower. So we all can put our tents and bags out on the, wherever we want on the property. And we just kick it, you know, stay up all night or as late as we can looking at, you know, for shooting stars. And man, for several years, we've had great luck with very little, interference as far as anything coming from, clouds mainly and rain, because it does rain all year long here in Oregon. I mean, you have a chance of rain even in the middle of August. So, we've really had great campovers, and we've been doing it for, I don't know, forever, like 20 years or something. We've been having the sleepover. Now the grandkids, I mean, the oldest one is 10. So, you know, they've only been doing it for about 10 years, but it's a pretty good time. Looking forward to it. And I also, there's a couple places I want to hike to this year. I'd love to do that hike I did last year, which means, of course, there might be some Saturday shows that aren't live, but that's okay. I'll make sure something goes up and everybody can, you know, get their redneck dentist fix. There is such a thing. Let's see, where do I want to start first? I'll tell you one thing I wanted to talk about a little bit. Somebody earlier this week that I was listening to made a really good point about this, the agenda that they have in the, in elementary schools to talk to children about, you know, their sexual identity, their, I guess, sexual preferences. I don't even know everything that is in the teacher's plan, education plan, looking for the word, I'm not finding it, but that's okay. But this is what I was thinking, and what somebody else pointed out, and I thought, that is such a perfect point. And again, another point of hypocrisy. That I think because it just is so real. It's like, okay, how do these two things make sense coming from the same, you know, political organization, basically? And that is, if I were at work in my dental office, if I started talking about this stuff openly with the women in this office, that would be considered inappropriate, correct? Like, I can't just go up to the women in my office, or any men for that matter, and start asking them about their sexual preferences, or, you know, what they like to do sexually, or how, you know, how do you view your sexual parts? Like, are you, do you identify as a female or a male? Do you have a penis or a vagina, or breast? I mean, you know, you can't talk about that stuff with adults in the workplace, which I know probably a lot of us have. I certainly have, and I've had staff that, you know, were fine with doing that in the past and didn't seem like anybody was offended. Everybody kind of asked if anybody would be offended, and, you know, people just enjoyed that kind of humor in the office, I guess. But you can't do that. So if we've gone so far as to not allow that conversation between adults in the workplace or in public, I mean, you can't stand in the line at the store and turn around to the person behind you and start asking them about their sexual preferences, or start telling them, hey, tonight when you go home, you should ask your father about his masturbation practices. Are you kidding me? Like, you can't do that in public, and you can't do it at work. In fact, you can't do it in most public settings. It wouldn't be acceptable. But here we have people who want to take children from kindergarten on up, any grade, and sit down and have those conversations with them. And another point I thought about when I was kind of going over all this. So if you were in, sorry, losing my voice, dang allergies, hasn't really knocked down enough pollens. The snow hasn't really taken out enough pollens around here. So I'm still battling that. But let's say you were sitting in the local park, like you took your kids to the park, and somebody came up and kind of, you know, got down on your child's level, like kneeled down, just got, you know, just to get eye to eye with them. And you can see that there's a conversation going on there. And then you kind of try and start listening. And you hear this person talking to your child about their sexual identity. You know, their gender identity. Or start talking about their private parts. Like, what would you do to that person? And I'm not just talking about the dads out there. Heck, I know what dads would do. I'm more afraid of what moms would do. Moms wouldn't allow that stuff to happen. They would go crazy getting that pervert away from their kid. And yet somehow we've got to the point where the people who are in the system of educating children, they've got to the point where they think not only that this is okay, but everybody's just going to stand by and let them do it. That is what is insane to me. It's crazy to me. You know what's really crazy? As I start thinking back to those people when they were in college, like when they went to college to become a teacher, I don't know, maybe you don't have to go to college to become a teacher anymore. Maybe that's a stepping off point for me. I don't even know what the qualifications are anymore. But, like, so are you sitting, like, you're getting ready to graduate high school, and you're like, man, what would I like to do for the rest of my life? Really, I'd like to be put in a position where I could sit down with 6-year-olds and talk about their gender identity and whether or not they should keep their penis or have it cut off, or whether or not they should start hormonal treatment because, you know, I want them to be like me. Yeah, I think that's what I want to do. So let's see, what do I have to do now? Oh, I have to go to college. Okay, so what courses do I have to take? A bunch of, you know, literature, probably social studies, and probably not so much history, but yeah, I got to get through all this stuff. I got to work really hard for 4 years so I can sit down with six-year-olds and talk to them about their sexual identity. I mean, seriously. Who would do that? I mean, obviously, you know, they're pretty easy to identify. And I hope everybody has really taken the time to identify these people. I mean, we don't have like a dog in the fight anymore. The grandkids are being homeschooled, which is awesome. Drink time, sorry. You know, the grandkids are being homeschooled, so we don't have to worry about those people getting their hands on them. But still, there's a lot of kids out there who are still going to public school. I wouldn't have my kids in public school for anything. A matter of fact, a few years ago, when these grandkids were young, when Hayden's the oldest, when he was the youngest, and as they were growing up, you know, going to public school, I think Rochelle and I were talking about, like, hey, we got to figure out a way, you know, to get these kids out of public school. And, you know, we're not their parents. You know, so it's like, well, we can only do what we can do. I mean, but, you know, their parents have made, you know, Crystal and Sheck have made great decisions with their kids and their family. And I really respect them for that. I really respect them for everything they do. They are great parents. And if they have to put their kids in power, if they decide to put their kids in public school, I can tell you this, they'll be keeping an eye on all of the stuff that goes on there. But, you know, for whatever reason, I mean, right now it's working out awesome because they're getting homeschooled. And that's a great thing because you can keep those perverts away from your kids. It's like terrifying to me that you have these adults in those positions of authority. And I mean, there's something else too. What is that? Like quid pro quo? Isn't there something like that? Whereas if you're kind of the authority figure, like I know when I became an officer in the U.S. Public Health Service, and you go through these courses and they go, now listen, you know, no fraternizing with, you know, the others, whatever they are. Like, don't take the chance. Even as a dentist, like if I were to become involved with a patient, I could be like in trouble, air quotes, if that patient decided that, you know, for whatever reason, they wanted to press, you know, some kind of, make a scene. Oh my goodness. Because I would be viewed as a person in a position of authority, being the dentist, and that, you know, that person wasn't able to make up their own mind, and that they were influenced by my awesome power, of course, and that could be actually held against me. Now, how do we have teachers not only put in that position, but then given the power and authority to start talking to children about sex? I mean, it actually becomes the very thing that you're told as an adult you cannot do, is be a person in that position of authority and then use that authority to have an affair or whatever. So the hypocrisy is real. The hypocrisy is, well, we can do this with little children, barely older than babies. We can do that. But hey, when you go to work, when you go to school, when you're in a public setting amongst adults, don't you dare talk about any of these things. Yeah, I don't know how the left makes that make sense to themselves. It doesn't make sense if you actually just sit down and think about it a little bit. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, I know what they're doing. I know what their goal is. Number one, they've got to create more lettered people. You know, they need more transgender, you know, all of the alphabet. It keeps growing like every week. They need more people because they're such a small fraction of the population right now. And it's kind of crazy that they're actually getting so much traction. Obviously, it's pretty well organized because there's really not that many as far as a fraction of the population. But they are really kind of being the squeaky wheel and getting a lot of this stuff going so they can increase their numbers. And I think that's basically what they're doing. They're looking for support. They're trying to turn children when they're children, when children can't even make sense of the world. Like they don't even know, you know, a four-year-old, if I told Jubilee, I think she's five now, if I told Jubilee unicorns don't exist, she doesn't even know what that means, don't exist. Because her unicorn would be sitting right in front of her. And she'd be like, well, this unicorn is sitting right here. She wouldn't understand the concept about that, well, it doesn't really exist because it's right in front of her. She sees it on TV. She sees unicorn on TV. So, of course, unicorn exists. But let's say if she was in public school next year, they would be, you know, the idea would be that they would start talking to her about whether or not she's a male or a female, or if she identifies correctly. Did you hear that freak show guy talking about that sometimes doctors don't guess right the gender of a child? That most of the time they do a pretty good job, but sometimes they don't get it right. That was the craziest damn thing I've ever heard of human. Nah, it's not. I mean, I'm sure there's been tons more. But it's pretty crazy that somebody would tell a child that doctors identify you when you're born as male or female because, look, you know, you have this part or that part. But sometimes they get it wrong. Because sometimes we identify as something different. Man, I hope this comes to a screeching halt soon. I think more and more people are really waking up and doing things about this. People who actually have their children in school are actually starting to step up and say, hey, look, stop it. This is not what I want my child to learn in school. I want them to come out of school with some, you know, some skills they can actually use to go on in life. Like, let's learn how to do math so when they buy a dozen donuts and somebody says, I made you a baker's dozen, they know what a baker's dozen is. They know what a dozen is. They know what a cup of milk is. Or they know what, you know, 35 minutes, you know, bake at 350 for 35 minutes. They could do all that math and solve that story problem. Or have some other skills, you know, some ability to read. So when somebody puts a contract in front of them, they know what to look for in that contract. Like I told you the story about my grandson saying that his other grandpa, that we have different names, but his other grandpa, you know, paid him, said he was paying him, I forget, $5. Oh, yeah, it was $5 an hour. $5 an hour to work an eight-hour day. And I was like, oh, how much did he pay you? And he said $25. And I was like, oh, okay. I go, how long did you work? And he said 8 hours. I go, okay, all right. So, like, I let a couple days go by, and I go, hey, Hayden, I go, you really ought to do the math on that whole arrangement you have with your other grandpa. I said, you should really kind of check the math of how much money he's paying you for your 8 hours of work. And, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff we want our kids to learn, you know. So when you're, you know, because they're all anxious at 15 and 16, you know, to get out of the house because they think they've got it all figured out. Well, we want them to have the tools to have that all figured out for sure. Like, I want to make sure they can read to protect themselves. I want to make sure they can, you know, add simple, you know, columns and numbers so they know how much money they're getting paid. They know how much taxes they're going to pay, you know, and all that stuff. Oh, boy. Cowboy Tech must be lighting off some bullets. He says the smell of gunpowder in the air. That's awesome. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. I'm glad to see people actually doing something about this curriculum. I'm glad that parents are actually starting to step in and get involved and say, no, we're not doing this anymore. So let me see what else I have on my agenda, because I have some pretty fun stuff. I mean, I always think it's fun to just find these things. Keep the inflation stuff in mind for sure. Oh, I'll tell you, this was the next greatest story I thought of the week that I ran into, but it has to do a lot with Texas, which, you know, I know a lot of people like hate Texans, but God, you got to hand it to them, man. Sometimes they do the most bitchinous stuff. So number one, I guess some busload, a busload at least, of illegals went from Texas to Washington, D.C., and they were dropped off, which I think that's the best solution ever, because the federal government wants them here so bad, and it's not a crisis. They should all get bused straight to D.C. first thing out of the gate so that they can be properly, you know, acclimated to the United States by going, you know, to D.C. and seeing what that's all about. It's a perfect thing. Anyway, so Texas did that. They put a bunch of them on buses and sent them to D.C. and dropped them off. I love it. I wish every border town would do that. You know, you're on the B line. Get on bus number 7 right there. Off you go. Your indoctrination will begin in Washington, D.C. tomorrow afternoon. Oh, no. Probably takes more than a day to get there, don't you think? Okay, but here's something else that Texas did. And at first I was reading this story. I was like, man, I don't understand. Like, how is that interfering with things? But now the picture all came together. So now I kind of understand everything. I had to wait and kind of listen to what Psaki said about, you know, Texas being the cause of inflation now. So now it's Texas who's causing inflation. This is how they're doing it. So I got to read some of this because I, you know, want to get the verbiage right, if there's such a thing. I called this Texas chess match or Mexican standoff. It's good to see a politician with some cojones. Several ports of entry between Texas and Mexico have suffered major slowdowns in recent days as the Texas Department of Public Safety, DPS, began inspections as part of Governor Greg Abbott's border security plan. DPS officers have conducted enhanced commercial vehicle safety inspections since April 6th. At 7 ports of entry, Brownsville, Los Indios, Far, Laredo, Eagle Pass, Del Rio, and El Paso. Texas has 28 land ports of entry with Mexico. So, just so you understand this, this is what Texas did. It's like, the federal government's like, yeah, we're just opening the floodgates. You know, you just come on through, however you get here is fine with us, and however many, we don't care, just keep coming, and Texas is like, nope, I don't think so. we're putting a stop to some of this right here. So what they're doing, and this is why Psaki blames Texas for the inflammation, inflation. I guess it is inflammation. It's inflammation of our money. So what they're doing is they're stopping commercial vehicles, anything that looks like a commercial vehicle. They're stopping them and doing like really thorough inspections of them. And if their brake pads are worn down too much, if they have not enough tread on their tires, you know, if their, you know, lights aren't working correctly, if they're, you know, any problem with that commercial vehicle, they're getting turned around and sent back. So, of course, this is causing a huge backup at the border, like 7 hours to get across the border at some of these border crossings. And you know what? Good on Texas, man. I mean, yeah, it's going to inconvenience some other people. That's the price. I guess that's a price that has to be paid. It says significant slowdowns were recorded at the FAR Reynosa International Bridge, with wait time increasing as much as 4 hours, according to real-time data captured on the Customs and Border Protection website. So they're obviously monitoring this. You know, monitoring it live. Because, of course, they want to know how fast, how many we're getting in here. It's important to get them in here fast and efficient. Oops. Nope. Texas says no. I love Texas in a way, man. They really don't need the federal government for anything. Honestly, they don't. They could literally just say, keep your damn money. We don't care. Probably why they can get away with so much of the stuff they can, because so many of the rest, I mean, my state, for crying out loud, Oregon, are you kidding me? If it wasn't for government money, we would have no money. This state is so messed up politically and financially. Ridiculous. Anyway, good for Texas. I hope they have some success there, and I hope they just keep shipping some of those travelers north to D.C. I love that. Love it. I think however many they get per day, that's how many they ought to send to D.C. And I'd love to see them just like gathered up in D.C. You know, D.C. can start the food lines, the soup lines. They can start their medical care. I mean, they got all those great public health service transgender people ought to be more than willing to help out, you know, the migrants that have come across the border. I mean, they talk about it all the time, how great it is, and you know how open-armed the United States is. Well, good. Then put those United States Public Health Service officers to work doing it. They want to wear the uniform. I think it's good. They ought to actually practice what being a public health service officer is. You know, it's always been about helping the needy. You know, if you're in the public health service, actually, you go to places that don't have regular, reliable health care services, like Indian reservations. Not so much today. They do have better health care services. A lot of those are still, the personnel still there is public health service people. Federal prisons have public health service people. The Coast Guard uses public health service people because they didn't have their own for the longest time. I still don't think they do, because they contact me once in a while. Hey, you know, you don't need a state license to work in the federal government. You can work here, 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 and here. And, you know, Alaska uses a lot of public health service people. You know, those border crossings use a lot of public health service people. I think those people that, in my opinion, falsely put on the uniform because they haven't done a damn thing to deserve it, ought to go actually provide some public health service to needy communities. And if they're not willing to do that, I can't think of a better answer or solution to that problem than to actually bring the needy to them. Can't wait. I cannot wait to see the response, to see how they handle it. We'll never see it, of course, because it's not going to happen. They are not going to provide care for those migrants that Texas sent to D.C. They're going to get them out of there as fast as they can. Talk about hypocrisy. That's hypocrisy. You think those migrants will be there, the ones that came from Texas? You think they'll be there by tomorrow? They arrived today. I don't know. We'll see. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens there. Man, I hope that bus route is full right now. I don't know how many buses he has. I hope he just keeps them on a loop, man. Hell, they could probably just pump. You know, that's the thing. Texas could probably just start pumping their own oil, converting the crude to gas and diesel, and just keep that line going, man. Oh, that's awesome. All right. My next rant is on the way. Let me make sure I have everything in order, though. I really appreciate you guys joining me. I have had so much fun doing this podcast. And, you know, keep doing it because I'm having fun. Hope you guys do too. I hope I provide you some, you know, little tidbits here and there. Okay, so, yeah. I've been dying to talk about this concept, and it was actually a friend of mine who really kept this in my, kind of kept it in front of me enough that I finally had to actually write a little piece about it. So here it is. And, you know, I'm not a writer. It may be a tad bit disorganized. I noticed, like, when I finished it today, then I was like, oh, I wanted to add this one other thing. Oh, hey, before I get there, okay, I'm going to mention this really fast because I think I'll be short on time. There's a mug out there. It's called the Sleepy Joe mug or something like that. It's a Dr. Seuss, like, rhyme written about Biden. And the left went crazy when they heard about this. And I just love this cup. I got to get one myself. I will leave a link in the show notes so that you can go get your own or at least see it. My God, it is like the funniest freaking cup. It's just one of those cups that you'll, like, I would buy it just to piss people off. Like, just I would buy it and just take it where I know there's a bunch of libs that I could drink coffee in front of, and just, like, I'd probably take it to Starbucks and sit outside at one of their tables, like, order up one of their drinks and then sit outside at one of their tables and just pour it in this cup and then maybe go to everybody's table and just holding my cup right in front of them. It's got Dr. Seuss on it. Yeah, so when you follow the link, go read the entire article. It's a great article. I think you'll enjoy it. A lot of people have already. But anyway, yeah, the Dr. Seuss Sleepy Joe mug. Oh my God, it's funny. Okay, so this is a piece I wrote. I hope you enjoy it. Green energy device and vehicle manufacturers should only be allowed to use purely green energy. And I don't mean they should buy green energy off the grid that was built by fossil-fueled energy plants, but I mean they should have to build and use only energy from their own solar and wind and whatever other source of energy are falsely or otherwise defined as green. It is fictitious to say that you are only using green energy when you are buying it off the grid. That does not, buying off the grid, that doesn't distinguish between green energy and fossil energy. So this is kind of a word game. It's kind of BS, like a lot of BS. So let's say a company says, we only use green energy. Well, where do you get it? Like, so where do you get your energy? Oh, it just comes in on the wires. Well, then how do you know you're only using green energy? Well, because we only pay for green energy. If that isn't the biggest crock of crap I've ever heard of, and I looked up, I don't know, 5 or 6 companies that claim to be so green. Like, what's the one here in Oregon? Intel. Man, I can't remember if it's Intel. Man, for some reason, I was going to say it was IT&T. It doesn't matter. But if you Google green energy companies and you literally kind of drill down where they get their power, they get their power off the same lines that everybody else gets their power from. There is no way to distinguish that the power coming off of that line came from a wind turbine or came from a solar panel or came from a geothermal or whatever other stuff they want to call green. Drink time. So it's a farce, but I'd like to see them actually have to build their own wind farms, their own solar panel fields, and whatever other energy they consider green energy, and then they can start their manufacturing process, and they can manufacture or do whatever businesses that they do, and call it green. Let's make it actually green. Let's make it actually green powered, like solar power, solar panel plants. Let's make them green. You know, you're making solar panels. You think so much of them. You think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Good. Put a bajillion of them out there and create enough power during the day for you to carry out your business, creating more solar panels. Yeah, and then of course you'll need a huge bank of batteries to store that power in for the nighttime. Same with the wind power that will only generate power when it's windy. But this is what I'd like to see. If you truly are green, let's put your money where your mouth is and run on actual green energy. Now, I mean, this is kind of like the carbon thing, like buying carbon, captured carbon. Like, I want to buy, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go find whatever market you buy carbon from. And I'm going to tell them I would like my carbon shipped here to my house, so I can see how much carbon I saved from the environment. Can pretty much guarantee you they're not going to ship me any carbon. It's a farce. It's just throwing money. You know, here's the deal. It's as fictitious as you being transgender wanting me to believe you're transgender. That's your fantasy, not mine. Buying captured carbon is a fantasy. It's not real. It's unicorn meat. That's what it is. It's unicorn meat. Except that carbon actually does exist. And you can pay somebody for the right to say that you own some. But you can't put your hand on it. You can't physically touch it. They aren't going to send it to you, captured carbon. It's a joke. But yeah, I want to see these companies. I want to see electric car companies. I want to see solar panel companies. I want to see companies that create parts for wind turbines. I want to see them only use green energy. Honest to God. Just if it's so great and you want to claim you're so green, I want you to go green. Have the power company come out and disconnect the wires that, you know, bring fossil fuel to your establishment 24/7. Fossil fuel power is what I want to say. Yeah, have them take those lines off and you just hook up to your solar panel array and your wind farm array, and let's see how much manufacturing you actually get done. And don't be buying any of those cars that use fossil fuel. Don't be using any of those on your compound either. Everything's got to be green. I would literally love to see one factory do this. Just one. Show us that it can actually be done in the next 100 years. But do it today. Somebody, if it's that great, somebody should be able to do that today. Well, I mean, within a year or two. Give you enough time to actually, you know, kind of get the plans drawn up and, you know, buy the property where you can put your wind farm out and your solar panel array out. You know, and get those things going. I'll give you time to get the drawings done and figure out how long you're going to be able to run an excavator that doesn't use fossil fuel, you know, to prepare the land to start making the footings for your buildings and start pouring concrete. Yeah, how long will those electric vehicles run? If you don't know that whole idea is a farce, man, you got a long ways to go. But hopefully you get there soon. Oh my God. Yeah. I say we are already seeing the results of massive solar panel field effects on the environment. The debris left by decaying and broken panels left in the environment to decay or not. We also are watching thousands of birds being killed by wind turbines. Some company had to pay a fee for killing bald eagles just this past week because they killed so many bald eagles with their wind turbines. We have yet to come to grips with the massive amount of earth that needs to be mined to produce lithium carbonate and nickel for the and cobalt, for that matter, that's mined by children for the batteries for electric cars and storage of power. So come on, greenies, put up or shut up. Hey, thanks you guys for joining me. I will see you Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, and